88% of the workweek is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Part 1 of The Watsons. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Gesine. The Watsons, a fragment of a novel by Jane Austen. Part 1. The first winter assembly in the town of Dee in Surrey was to be held on Tuesday, October 13th. And it was generally expected to be a very good one. A long list of country families was confidently run over as sure of attending, and sanguine hopes were entertained that the Osbornes themselves would be there. The Edwards invitation to the Watsons followed, of course. The Edwards were people of fortune, who lived in the town and kept their coach. The Watsons inhabited a village about 3 miles distant, were poor, and had no close carriage. And ever since there had been balls in the place, the former were accustomed to invite the latter to dress, dine, and sleep at their house on every monthly return throughout the winter. On the present occasion, as only 2 of Mr. Watson's children were at home, and 1 was always necessary as companion to himself, for he was sickly and had lost his wife, 1 only could profit by the kindness of their friends. Miss Emma Watson, who was very recently returned to her family from the care of an aunt who had brought her up, was to make her first public appearance in the neighbourhood, and her eldest sister, whose delight in a ball was not lessened by a 10 years' enjoyment, had some merit in cheerfully undertaking to drive her and all her finery in the old chair to Dee on the important morning. As they splashed along the dirty lane, Miss Watson thus instructed and cautioned her inexperienced sister. I dare say it will be a very good ball, and among so many officers you will hardly want partners. You will find Mrs. Edwards' maid very willing to help you, and I would advise you to ask Mary Edwards' opinion if you are at all at a loss, for she has very good taste. If Mr. Edwards does not lose his money at cards, he will stay as late as you wish for. If he does, he will hurry you home perhaps, but you are sure of some comfortable soup. I hope you will be in good looks. I should not be surprised if you were to be thought of one of the prettiest girls in the room. There is a great deal in novelty. Perhaps Tom Musgrave may take notice of you, but I would advise you by all means not to give him any encouragement. He generally pays attention to every new girl, but he is a great flirt and never means anything serious. I think I have heard you speak of him before, said Emma. Who is he? A young man of very good fortune, quite independent and remarkably agreeable, a universal favourite wherever he goes. Most of the girls hereabout are in love with him, or have been. I believe I am the only one among them that have escaped with a whole heart, and yet I was the first he paid attention to when he came to this country 6 years ago, and very great attention did he pay me. Some people say that he has never seemed to like a girl so well since, though he is always behaving in a particular way to one or another. "'And how came your heart to be the only cold one?' said Emma, smiling. "'There was a reason for that,' replied Miss Watson, changing colour. I have not been very well used among them, Emma. I hope you will have better luck. Dear sister, I beg your pardon if I have unthinkingly given you pain. When first we knew Tom Musgrave, continued Miss Watson, without seeming to hear her, I was very much attached to a young man of the name of Purvis, a particular friend of Robert's, who used to be with us a great deal. Everybody thought it would have been a match. A sigh accompanied these words, which Emma respected in silence, but her sister, after a short pause, went on. You will naturally ask why it did not take place, and why he is married to another woman while I am still single. But you must ask her, not me. You must ask Penelope. Yes, Emma, Penelope was at the bottom of it all. She thinks everything fair for her husband. I trusted her. She set him against me, with a view of gaining him herself, and it ended in his discontinuing his visits, and soon after marrying somebody else. Penelope makes light of her conduct, but I think such treachery very bad. It has been the ruin of my happiness. I shall never love any man as I love Purvis. I do not think Tom Musgrave should be named with him in the same day. You quite shock me by what you say of Penelope, said Emma. Could a sister do such a thing? Rivalry, treachery between sisters. I shall be afraid of being acquainted with her. But I hope it was not so. Appearances were against her. You do not know Penelope. There is nothing she would not do to get married. She would as good as tell you so herself. Do not trust her with any secrets of your own. Take warning by me, do not trust her. She has her good qualities, but she has no faith, no honour, no scruples, if she can promote her own advantage. I wish with all my heart she was well married. I declare I had rather have her well married than myself. Than yourself? Yes, I can suppose so. A heart wounded like yours can have little inclination for matrimony. Not much indeed. But you know we must marry. I could do very well single for my own part. A little company and a pleasant ball now and then would be enough for me, if one could be young forever. But my father cannot provide for us, and it is very bad to grow old and be poor and laughed at. I have lost Purvis, it is true, but very few people marry their first loves. I should not refuse a man because he was not Purvis. Not that I can ever quite forgive Penelope. Emma shook her head in acquiescence. Penelope, however, has had her troubles, continued Miss Watson. She was sadly disappointed in Tom Musgrave, who afterwards transferred his attention from me to her, and whom she was very fond of. But he never means anything serious, and when he had trifled with her long enough, he began to slight her for Margaret, and poor Penelope was very wretched. And since she has been trying to make some match at Chichester, she won't tell us with whom, but I believe it is a rich old Dr. Harding, uncle to the friend she goes to see, and she has taken a vast deal of trouble about him, and given up a great deal of time to no purpose as yet. When she went away the other day, she said it should be the last time. I suppose you did not know what her particular business was at Chichester, nor guess at the object which could take her away from Stanton just as you were coming home after so many years' absence. No, indeed, I had not the smallest suspicion of it. I considered her engagement to Mrs. Shaw just at the time as very unfortunate for me. I had hoped to find all my sisters at home, to be able to make an immediate friend of each. I suspect the doctor to have had an attack of the asthma, and that she was hurried away on that account. The Shaws are quite on her side, at least I believe so, but she tells me nothing. She professes to keep her own counsel. She says, and truly enough, that too many cooks spoil the broth. I am sorry for her anxieties, said Emma, but I do not like her plans or her opinions. I shall be afraid of her. She must have too masculine and bold a temper. To be so bent on marriage, to pursue a man merely for the sake of situation, is a sort of thing that shocks me. I cannot understand it. Poverty is a great evil, but to a woman of education and feeling it ought not, it cannot be the greatest. I would rather be a teacher at a school, and I can think of nothing worse, than marry a man I did not like. I would rather do anything than be a teacher at a school, said her sister. I have been at school, Emma, and know what a life they lead. You never have. I should not like marrying a disagreeable man any more than yourself, but I do not think there are many very disagreeable men. I think I could like any good-humoured man with a comfortable income. I suppose my aunt brought you up to be rather refined. Indeed, I do not know. My conduct must tell you how I have been brought up. I am no judge of it myself. I cannot compare my aunt's method with any other person's, because I know no other. But I can see in a great many things that you are very refined. I have observed it ever since you came home, and I am afraid it will not be for your happiness. Penelope will laugh at you very much. That will not be for my happiness, I am sure. If my opinions are wrong, I must correct them. If they are above my situation, I must endeavour to conceal them, but I doubt whether ridicule... Has Penelope much wit? Yes, she has great spirits and never cares what she says. Margaret is more gentle, I imagine. Yes, especially in company. She is all gentleness and mildness when anybody is by. But she is a little fretful and perverse among ourselves. Poor creature! She is possessed with the notion of Tom Musgrave's being more seriously in love with her than he ever was with anybody else, and is always expecting him to come to the point. This is the second time within this 12 months that she has gone to spend a month with Robert and Jane on purpose to egg him on by her absence. But I am sure she is mistaken, and that he will no more follow her to Croydon now than he did last March. He will never marry unless he can marry somebody very great. Miss Osborne, perhaps, or something in that style. Your account of this Tom Musgrave, Elizabeth, gives me very little inclination for his acquaintance. You are afraid of him. I do not wonder at you. No, indeed. I dislike and despise him. Dislike and despise Tom Musgrave? No, that you never can. I defy you not to be delighted with him if he takes notice of you. I hope he will dance with you, and I dare say he will. Unless the Osbornes come with a large party, and then he will not speak to anybody else.
He seems to have the most engaging manners, said Emma. Well, we shall see how irresistible Mr. Tom Musgrave and I find each other. I suppose I shall know him as soon as I enter the ballroom. He must carry some of his charm in his face.
You will not find him in the ballroom, I can tell you. You will go early, that Mrs. Edwards may get a good place by the fire, and he never comes till late. If the Osbornes are coming, he will wait in the passage and come in with them. I should like to look in upon you, Emma. If it was but a good day with my father, I would wrap myself up, and James should drive me over as soon as I had made tea for him, and I should be with you by the time the dancing began.
What, would you come late at night in this chair?
To be sure I would. There, I said you were very refined, and that's an instance of it. Emma for a moment made no answer. At last she said,
I wish, Elizabeth, you had not made a point of my going to this ball. I wish you were going instead of me. Your pleasure would be greater than mine. I am a stranger here, and know nobody but the Edwardses. My enjoyment, therefore, must be very doubtful. Yours among all your acquaintance would be certain. It is not too late to change. Very little apology could be requisite to the Edwardses, who must be more glad of your company than of mine, and I should most readily return to my father, and should not be at all afraid to drive this quiet old creature home. Your clothes I would undertake to find means of sending to you.
My dearest Emma, cried Elizabeth warmly, do you think I would do such a thing? Not for the universe. But I shall never forget your good nature in proposing it. You must have a sweet temper indeed. I never met with anything like it. And would you really give up the ball that I might be able to go to it? Believe me, Emma, I am not so selfish as that comes to. No, though I am 9 years older than you are, I would not be the means of keeping you from being seen. And it should be very hard that you should not have as fair a chance as we have all had to make your fortune. No, Emma, whoever stays at home this winter, it shan't be you. I am sure I should never have forgiven the person who kept me from a ball at 19. Emma expressed her gratitude, and for a few minutes they jogged on in silence. Elizabeth first spoke. You will take notice who Mary Edwards dances with.
I will remember her partners if I can, but you know they will all be strangers to me. Only observe whether she dances with Captain Hunter more than once. I have my fears in that quarter. Not that her father or mother like officers, but if she does, you know, it is all over with poor Sam, and I have promised to write him word who she dances with. Is Sam attached to Miss Edwards? Did you not know that? How should I know it? How should I know in Shropshire what is passing of that nature in Surrey? It is not likely that circumstances of such delicacy should have made any part of the scanty communication which passed between you and me for the last 14 years. I wonder I never mentioned it when I wrote. Since you have been at home, I have been so busy with my poor father and our great Wash that I have had no leisure to tell you anything. But indeed I concluded you knew it all. He has been very much in love with her these 2 years, and it is a great disappointment to him that he cannot always get away to our balls, but Mr. Curtis won't often spare him, and just now it is a sickly time at Guildford. Do you suppose Miss Edwards inclined to like him? I am afraid not. You know she is an only child, and will have at least 10,000 pounds. But still she may like our brother. Oh, no, the Edwards look much higher. Her father and mother would never consent to it. Sam is only a surgeon, you know. Sometimes I think she does like him. But Mary Edwards is rather prim and reserved. I do not always know what she would be at. Unless Sam feels on sure grounds with the lady herself, it seems a pity to me that he should be encouraged to think of her at all. A young man must think of somebody, said Elizabeth, and why should he not be as lucky as Robert, who has a good wife and 6,000 pounds? We must not all expect to be individually lucky, replied Emma. The luck of one member of a family is luck to all. Mine is all to come, I am sure, said Elizabeth, giving another sigh to the remembrance of Purvis. I have been unlucky enough, and I cannot say much for you, as my aunt married again so foolishly. Well, you will have a good ball, I dare say. The next turning will bring us to the turnpike. You may see the church tower over the hedge, and the White Hart is close by it. I shall long to know what you think of Tom Musgrave. Such were the last audible sounds of Miss Watson's voice before they passed through the turnpike gate and entered on the pitching of the town, the jumbling and noise of which made farther conversation most thoroughly undesirable. The old mare trotted heavily on, wanting no direction of the reins to take the right turning, and making only one blunder in proposing to stop at the milliner's before she drew up towards Mr. Edward's door. Mr. Edward lived in the best house in the street, and the best in the place, if Mr. Tomlinson, the banker, might be indulged in calling his newly erected house at the end of the town, with a shrubbery and sweep, in the country. Mr. Edward's house was higher than most of its neighbours, with 4 windows on each side of the door, the windows guarded by posts and chains, and the door approached by a flight of stone steps. "Here we are," said Elizabeth, as the carriage ceased moving, "safely arrived, and by the market clock we have been only 5:30 coming, which I think is doing pretty well, though it would be nothing for Penelope. Is not it a nice town? The Edwards have a noble house, you see, and they live quite in style. The door will be opened by a man in livery, with a powdered head, I can tell you." Emma had seen the Edwardses only one morning at Stanton. They were therefore all but strangers to her, and though her spirits were by no means indispensable to the expected joys of the evening, she felt a little uncomfortable in the thought of all that was to precede them. Her conversation with Elizabeth, too, giving her some very unpleasant feelings with respect to her own family, had made her more open to disagreeable impressions from any other cause, and increased her sense of the awkwardness of rushing into intimacy on so slight an acquaintance. There was nothing in the manner of Mrs. or Miss Edwards to give immediate change to these ideas. The mother, though a very friendly woman, had a reserved air, and a great deal of formal civility. And her daughter, a genteel-looking girl of 22, with her hair in papers, seemed very naturally to have caught something of the style of her mother, who had brought her up. Emma was soon left to know what they could be, by Elizabeth's being obliged to hurry away, and some very languid remarks on the probable brilliancy of the ball were all that broke, at intervals, a silence of 30 minutes, before they were joined by the master of the house. Mr. Edwards had a much easier and more communicative air than the ladies of the family. He was fresh from the street, and he came ready to tell whatever might interest. After a cordial reception of Emma, he turned to his daughter with, "Well, Mary, I bring you good news. The Osbornes will certainly be at the ball tonight. Horses for two carriages are ordered from the White Hart to be at Osborne Castle by 9. "I am glad of it," observed Mrs. Edwards, "because their coming gives a credit to our assembly. The Osbornes, being known to have been at the first ball, will dispose a great many people to attend the second. It is more than they deserve, for in fact they add nothing to the pleasure of the evening. They come so late and go so early, but great people have always their charm." Mr. Edwards proceeded to relate every other article of news which his morning's lounge had supplied him with, and they chatted with greater briskness, till Mrs. Edwards' moment for dressing arrived, and the young ladies were carefully recommended to lose no time. Emma was shown to a very comfortable apartment, and as soon as Mrs. Edwards' civilities could leave her to herself, the happy occupation, the first bliss of a ball, began. The girls, dressing in some measure together, grew unavoidably better acquainted. Emma found in Miss Edwards the show of good sense, a modest unpretending mind, and a great wish of obliging, and when they returned to the parlour where Mrs. Edwards was sitting, respectably attired in one of the two satin gowns which went through the winter, and a new cap from the milliner's, they entered it with much easier feelings and more natural smiles than they had taken away. Their dress was now to be examined. Mrs. Edwards acknowledged herself too old-fashioned to approve of every modern extravagance, however sanctioned, and though complacently viewing her daughter's good looks, would give but a qualified admiration, and Mr. Edwards, not less satisfied with Mary, paid some compliments of good-humoured gallantry to Emma at her expense. The discussion led to more intimate remarks, and Miss Edwards gently asked Emma if she were not often reckoned very like her youngest brother. Emma thought she could perceive a faint blush accompany the question, and there seemed something still more suspicious in the manner in which Mr. Edward took up the subject. "You are paying Miss Emma no great compliment, I think, Mary," he said hastily. "Mr. Sam Watson is a very good sort of young man, and I dare say a very clever surgeon, but his complexion has been rather too much exposed to all weathers to make a likeness of him very flattering." Mary apologised in some confusion. She had not thought a strong likeness at all incompatible with very different degrees of beauty. There might be a resemblance in countenance, and the complexion and even the features be very unlike. "I know nothing of my brother's beauty," said Emma, "for I have not seen him since he was 7 years old, but my father reckons us alike."
"Mr. Watson!" cried Mr. Edwards. "Well, you astonish me. There is not the least likeness in the world. Your brother's eyes are grey, yours are brown. He has a long face and a wide mouth. My dear, do you perceive the least resemblance?"
"Not the least. Miss Emma Watson puts me very much in mind of her eldest sister, and sometimes I see a look of Miss Penelope, and once or twice there has been a glance of Mr. Robert, but I cannot perceive any likeness to Mr. Samuel."
"I see the likeness between her and Miss Watson," replied Mr. Edwards, "very strongly, but I am not sensible of the others. I do not much think she is like any of the family but Miss Watson, but I am sure there is no resemblance between her and Sam." This matter was settled, and they went to dinner.
"Your father, Miss Emma, is one of my oldest friends," said Mr. Edwards, as he helped her to wine, when they were drawn round the fire to enjoy their dessert. "We must drink to his better health. It is a great concern to me, I assure you, that he should be such an invalid. I know nobody who likes a game of cards, in a social way, better than he does, and very few people play a fairer rubber. It is a thousand pities that he should be so deprived of the pleasure. For now we have a quiet little whist club that meets 3 times a week at the White Hart, and if he could but have his health, how much he would enjoy it."
"I dare say he would, sir, and I wish with all my heart he were equal to it."
"Your club would be better fitted for an invalid," said Mrs. Edwards, "if you did not keep it up so late."
This was an old grievance.
"So late, my dear, what are you talking of?" cried the husband, with sturdy pleasantry. "We are always at home before midnight.
They would laugh at Osborne Castle to hear you call that late. They are but just rising from dinner at midnight."
"That is nothing to the purpose," retorted the lady calmly. "The Osbornes are to be no rule for us. You had better meet every night and break up 2 hours sooner."
So far the subject was very often carried, but Mr. and Mrs. Edwards were so wise as never to pass that point, and Mr. Edwards now turned to something else. He had lived long enough in the idleness of a town to become a little of a gossip, and having some anxiety to know more of the circumstances of his youngest guest than had yet reached him, he began with, "I think, Miss Emma, I remember your aunt very well. About 30 years ago, I am pretty sure I danced with her in the old rooms at Bath, the year before I married. She was a very fine woman then, but like other people, I suppose she has grown somewhat older since that time. I hope she is likely to be happy in her second choice."
"I hope so, I believe so, sir," said Emma in some agitation.
"Mr. Turner has not been dead a great while, I think."
"About 2 years, sir."
"I forget what her name is now."
"O'Brien."
"Irish, ah, I remember, and she is gone to settle in Ireland. I do wonder that you should not wish to go with her into that country, Miss Emma, but it must be a great deprivation to her, poor lady, after bringing you up like a child of her own."
"I was not so ungrateful, sir," said Emma warmly, "as to wish to be anywhere but with her. It did not suit them. It did not suit Captain O'Brien that I should be of the party."
"Captain?" repeated Mrs. Edwards.
"The gentleman is in the army, then?"
"Yes, ma'am." "Aye, there is nothing like your officers for captivating the ladies, young or old. There is no resisting a cockade, my dear."
"I hope there is," said Mrs. Edwards gravely, with a quick glance at her daughter, and Emma had just recovered from her own perturbation in time to see a blush on Miss Edwards' cheek, and in remembering what Elizabeth had said of Captain Hunter, to wander and waver between his influence and her brother's.
"Elderly ladies should be careful how they make a second choice," observed Mr. Edwards.
"Carefulness, discretion, should not be confined to elderly ladies or to a second choice," added his wife. "They are quite as necessary to young ladies in their first."
"Rather more so, my dear," replied he, "because young ladies are likely to feel the effects of it longer. When an old lady plays the fool, it is not in the course of nature that she should suffer from it many years."
Emma drew her hand across her eyes, and Mrs. Edwards, on perceiving it, changed the subject of one to less anxiety to all. The entrance of the tea-things at 7 o'clock was some relief, and luckily Mr. and Mrs. Edwards always drank a dish extraordinary, and ate an additional muffin when they were going to sit up late, which lengthened the ceremony almost to the wished-for moment. End of part one.
Part two of The Watsons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Read by Gesine. The Watsons, a fragment of a novel by Jane Austen. Part 2. At a little before 8, the Tomlinsons' carriage was heard to go by, which was the constant signal for Mrs. Edwards to order hers to the door, and in a very few minutes the party were transported from the quiet and warmth of a snug parlour to the bustle, noise, and draughts of the air of the broad entrance passage of an inn. Mrs. Edwards, carefully guarding her own dress, while she attended with yet greater solicitude to the proper security of her young charges' shoulders and throats, led the way up the wide staircase, while no sound of a ball but the first scrape of one violin blessed the ears of her followers. And Miss Edwards, on hazarding the anxious inquiry of whether there were many people come yet, was told by the waiter, as she knew she should, that Mrs. Tomlinson's family were in the room. In passing along a short gallery to the assembly room, brilliant in lights before them, they were accosted by a young man in a morning dress and boots, who was standing in the doorway of a bedchamber, apparently on purpose to see them go by.
"Ah, Mrs. Edwards, how do you do? How do you do, Miss Edwards?" he cried with an easy air. "You are determined to be in good time, I see, as usual.
The candles are but this moment lit.
"I like to get a good seat by the fire, you know, Mr. Musgrave," replied Mrs. Edwards.
"I am this moment going to dress," said he. "I am waiting for my stupid fellow. We shall have a famous ball. The Osbornes are certainly coming. You may depend upon that, for I was with Lord Osborne this morning."
The party passed on. Mrs. Edwards' satin gown swept along the clean floor of the ballroom to the fireplace at the upper end, where one party only were formally seated, while three or four officers were lounging together, passing in and out from the adjoining card-room. A very stiff meeting between these near neighbours ensued, and as soon as they were all duly placed again, Emma, in a low whisper which became the solemn scene, said to Miss Edwards,
"The gentleman we passed in the passage was Mr. Musgrave, then. He is reckoned remarkably agreeable, I understand."
Miss Edwards answered hesitatingly,
"Yes, he is very much liked by many people, but we are not very intimate." "He is rich, is not he?"
"He has about 800 or 900 pounds a year, I believe. He came into possession of it when he was very young, and my father and mother think it has given him rather an unsettled turn. He is no favourite with them."
The cold and empty appearance of the room and the demure air of the small cluster of females at one end of it began soon to give way. The inspiriting sound of other carriages was heard, and continual accessions of portly chaperons and strings of smartly dressed girls were received, with now and then a fresh gentleman straggler, who, if not enough in love to station himself near any fair creature, seemed glad to escape into the card-room. Among the increasing number of military men, one now made his way to Miss Edwards with an air of empressement, which decidedly said to her companion, "I am Captain Hunter," and Emma, who could not but watch her at such a moment, saw her looking rather distressed, but by no means displeased, and heard an engagement formed for the first two dances, which made her think her brother Sam's a hopeless case. Emma, in the meanwhile, was not unobserved or unadmired herself. A new face, and a very pretty one, could not be slighted. Her name was whispered from one party to another, and no sooner had the signal been given by the orchestra's striking up a favourite air, which seemed to call the young to their duty and people the centre of the room, than she found herself engaged to dance with a brother officer, introduced by Captain Hunter. Emma Watson was not more than of the middle height, well made and plump, with an air of healthy vigour. Her skin was very brown, but clear, smooth, and glowing, which, with a lively eye, a sweet smile, and an open countenance, gave beauty to attract, and expression to make that beauty improve on acquaintance. Having no reason to be dissatisfied with her partner, the evening began very pleasantly to her, and her feelings perfectly coincided with the reiterated observation of others that it was an excellent ball. The two first dances were not quite over when the returning sound of carriages after a long interruption called general notice, and "The Osbornes are coming! The Osbornes are coming!" was repeated round the room. After some minutes of extraordinary bustle without and watchful curiosity within, the important party, preceded by the attentive master of the inn to open a door which was never shut, made their appearance. They consisted of Lady Osborne, her son Lord Osborne, her daughter Miss Osborne, Miss Carr, her daughter's friend, Mr. Howard, formerly tutor to Lord Osborne, now clergyman in the parish in which the castle stood, Mrs. Blake, a widow sister who lived with him, her son, a fine boy of 10 years old, and Mr. Tom Musgrave, who, probably imprisoned within his own room, had been listening in bitter impatience to the sound of the music for the last half hour. In their progress up the room, they paused almost immediately behind Emma to receive the compliments of some acquaintance, and she heard Lady Osborne observe that they had made a point of coming early for the gratification of Mrs. Blake's little boy, who was uncommonly fond of dancing. Emma looked at them all as they passed, but chiefly, and with most interest, on Tom Musgrave, who was certainly a genteel, good-looking young man. Of the females, Lady Osborne had by much the finest person. Though nearly 50, she was very handsome, and had all the dignity of rank. Lord Osborne was a very fine young man, but there was the air of coldness, of carelessness, even of awkwardness about him,
which seemed to speak him out of his element in a ballroom. He came, in fact, only because it was judged expedient for him to please the borough. He was not fond of women's company, and he never danced. Mr. Howard was an agreeable-looking man, a little more than 30. At the conclusion of the two dances, Emma found herself, she knew not how, seated amongst the Osborne set, and she was immediately struck with the fine countenance and animated gestures of the little boy, as he was standing before his mother, wondering when they should begin. "You will not be surprised at Charles' impatience," said Mrs. Blake, a lively, pleasant-looking woman of 35, to a lady who was standing near her, "when you know what a partner he is to have. Miss Osborne has been so very kind as to promise to dance the first two dances with him." "Oh, yes, we have been engaged this week," cried the boy, "and we are to dance down every couple." On the other side of Emma, Miss Osborne, Miss Carr, and a party of young men were standing engaged in very lively consultation, and soon afterwards she saw the smartest officer of the set walking off to the orchestra to order the dance, while Miss Osborne, passing before her to her little expecting partner, hastily said, "Charles, I beg your pardon for not keeping my engagement, but I am going to dance these two dances with Colonel Beresford. I know you will excuse me, and I will certainly dance with you after tea." And without staying for an answer, she turned again to Miss Carr, and in another minute was led by Colonel Beresford to begin the set. If the poor little boy's face had in its happiness been interesting to Emma, it was infinitely more so under this sudden reverse. He stood the picture of disappointment, with crimsoned cheeks, quivering lips, and eyes bent on the floor. His mother, stifling her own mortification, tried to soothe his with the prospect of Miss Osborne's second promise, but though he contrived to utter, with an effort of boyish bravery, "Oh, I do not mind it," it was very evident, by the unceasing agitation of his features, that he minded it as much as ever. Emma did not think or reflect. She felt and acted. "I shall be very happy to dance with you, sir, if you like it," said she, holding out her hand with the most unaffected good humour. The boy, in one moment restored to all his first delight, looked joyfully at his mother, and stepping forwards with an honest and simple, "Thank you, ma'am," was instantly ready to attend his new acquaintance. The thankfulness of Mrs. Blake was more diffuse. With a look most expressive of unexpected pleasure and lively gratitude, she turned to her neighbour with repeated and fervent acknowledgments of so great and condescending a kindness to her boy. Emma, with perfect truth, could assure her that she could not be giving greater pleasure than she felt herself, and Charles being provided with his gloves and charged to keep them on, they joined the set which was now rapidly forming, with nearly equal complacency. It was a partnership which could not be noticed without surprise. It gained her a broad stare from Miss Osborne and Miss Carr as they passed her in the dance. "Upon my word, Charles, you are in luck," said the former as she turned him. "You have got a better partner than me," to which the happy Charles answered, "Yes." Tom Musgrave, who was dancing with Miss Carr, gave her many inquisitive glances, and after a time Lord Osborne himself came, and under pretence of talking to Charles, stood to look at his partner. Though rather distressed by such observation, Emma could not repent what she had done, so happy had it made both the boy and his mother, the latter of whom was continually making opportunities of addressing her with the warmest civility. Her little partner, she found, though bent chiefly on dancing, was not unwilling to speak when her questions or remarks gave him anything to say, and she learnt, by a sort of inevitable inquiry, that he had two brothers and a sister, that they and their mamma all lived with his uncle at Wickstead, that his uncle taught him Latin, that he was very fond of riding, and had a horse of his own, given him by Lord Osborne, and that he had been out once already with Lord Osborne's hounds. At the end of these dances, Emma found they were to drink tea. Miss Edwards gave her a caution to be at hand, in a manner which convinced her of Mrs. Edwards holding it very important to have them both close to her when she moved into the tea-room, and Emma was accordingly on the alert to gain her proper station. It was always the pleasure of the company to have a little bustle and crowd when they adjourned for refreshment. The tea-room was a small room within the card-room, and in passing through the latter, where the passage was straightened by tables, Mrs. Edwards and her party were for a few moments hemmed in. It happened close by Lady Osborne's casino table. Mr. Howard, who belonged to it, spoke to his nephew, and Emma, on perceiving herself the object of attention both to Lady Osborne and him, had just turned away her eye in time to avoid seeming to hear her young companion delightedly whisper loud, "Oh, uncle, do look at my partner, she is so pretty!" As they were immediately in motion again, however, Charles was hurried off without being able to receive his uncle's suffrage. On entering the tea-room, in which two long tables were prepared, Lord Osborne was to be seen quite alone, at the end of one, as if retreating as far as he could from the ball, to enjoy his own thoughts and gape without restraint. Charles instantly pointed him out to Emma. "There's Lord Osborne. Let you and I go and sit by him."
"No, no," said Emma, laughing. "You must sit with my friends."
Charles was now free enough to hazard a few questions in his turn. "What o'clock was it?"
11. 11, and I'm not at all sleepy. Mamma said I should be asleep before 10. Do you think Miss Osborne will keep her word with me when tea is over?"
"Oh, yes, I suppose so." Though she felt that she had no better reason to give than Miss Osborne had not kept it before.
"When shall you come to Osborne Castle?"
"Never, probably. I am not acquainted with the family."
"But you may come to Wickstead and see Mamma, and she can take you to the castle. There is a monstrous, curious, stuffed fox in there, and a badger. Anybody would think they were alive. It is a pity you should not see them."
On rising from tea, there was again a scramble for the pleasure of being first out of the room, which happened to be increased by one or two of the card parties having just broken up, and the players being disposed to move exactly the different way. Among these was Mr. Howard, his sister leaning on his arm, and no sooner were they within reach of Emma than Mrs. Blake, calling her notice by a friendly touch, said, "Your goodness to Charles, my dear Miss Watson, brings all his family upon you. Give me leave to introduce my brother, Mr. Howard." Emma curtsied, the gentleman bowed, made a hasty request for the honour of her hand in the two next dances, to which as hasty an affirmative was given, and they were immediately impelled in opposite directions. Emma was very well pleased with the circumstance. There was a quietly cheerful, gentlemanlike air in Mr. Howard which suited her, and in a few minutes afterwards the value of her engagement increased, when, as she was sitting in the card-room, somewhat screened by a door, she heard Lord Osborne, who was lounging on a vacant table near her, call Tom Musgrave towards him and say, "Why do you not dance with that beautiful Emma Watson? I want you to dance with her, and I will come and stand by you." "I was determining on it this very moment, my lord. I'll be introduced and dance with her directly."
"I do, and if you find she does not want much talking to, you may introduce me by and by."
"Very well, my lord. If she is like her sisters, she will only want to be listened to. I will go this moment. I shall find her in the tea-room. That stiff old Mrs. Edwards has never done tea." Away he went, Lord Osborne after him, and Emma lost no time in hurrying from her corner exactly the other way, forgetting in her haste that she left Mrs. Edwards behind. "We had quite lost you," said Mrs. Edwards, who followed her with Mary in less than 5 minutes. "If you prefer this room to the other, there is no reason why you should not be here, but we had better all be together." Emma was saved the trouble of apologizing by their being joined at that moment by Tom Musgrave, who, requesting Mrs. Edwards aloud to do him the honour of presenting him to Miss Emma Watson, left that good lady without any choice in the business, but that of testifying to the coldness of her manner that she did it unwillingly. The honour of dancing with her was solicited without loss of time, and Emma, however she might like to be thought a beautiful girl by a lord or commoner, was so little disposed to favour Tom Musgrave himself that she had considerable satisfaction in avowing her previous engagement. He was evidently surprised and discomposed. The style of her last partner had probably led him to believe her not overpowered with applications. "My little friend Charles Blake," he cried, "must not expect to engross you the whole evening. We can never suffer this. It is against the rules of the assembly, and I am sure it will never be patronized by our good friend here, Mrs. Edwards. She is by much too nice a judge of decorum to give her license to such dangerous particularity.
"I am not going to dance with Mr. Blake, sir."
The gentleman, a little disconcerted, could only hope he might be fortunate another time, and seeming unwilling to leave her, though his friend Lord Osborne was waiting in the doorway for the result, as Emma with some amusement perceived, he began to make civil inquiries after her family.
"How comes it that we have not the pleasure of seeing your sisters here this evening? Our assemblies have been used to be so well treated by them that we do not know how to take this neglect."
"My eldest sister is the only one at home, and she could not leave my father."
"Miss Watson, the only one at home? You astonish me. It seems but the day before yesterday that I saw them all three in this town. But I am afraid I have been a very sad neighbour of late. I hear dreadful complaints of my negligence wherever I go, and I confess it is a shameful length of time since I was at Stanton. But I shall now endeavour to make myself amends for the past."
Emma's calm courtesy in reply must have struck him as very unlike the encouraging warmth he had been used to receive from her sisters, and gave him probably the novel sensation of doubting his own influence, and of wishing for more attention than she bestowed. The dancing now recommenced, Miss Carr being impatient to call. Everybody was required to stand up, and Tom Musgrave's curiosity was appeased on seeing Mr. Howard come forward and claim Emma's hand. "That will do as well for me," was Lord Osborne's remark, when his friend carried him the news, and he was continually at Howard's elbow during the two dances. The frequency of his appearance there was the only unpleasant part of the engagement, the only objection she could make to Mr. Howard. In himself, she thought him as agreeable as he looked. Though chatting on the commonest topics, he had a sensible, unaffected way of expressing himself, which made them all worth hearing, and she only regretted that he had not been able to make his pupil's manners as unexceptionable as his own. The two dances seemed very short, and she had her partner's authority for considering them so. At their conclusion, the Osbornes and their train were all on the move. "We are off at last," said his lordship to Tom. "How much longer do you stay in this heavenly place, till sunrise?"
"No, faith, my lord, I have had quite enough of it. I assure you I shall not show myself here again when I have had the honour of attending Lady Osborne to her carriage. I shall retreat in as much secrecy as possible to the remote corner of the house, where I shall order a barrel of oysters and be famously snug. Let me see you soon at the castle, and bring me word how she looks by daylight."
Emma and Mrs. Blake parted as old acquaintance, and Charles shook her by the hand and wished her good-bye at least a dozen times. From Miss Osborne and Miss Carr she received something like a jerking curtsey as they passed her. Even Lady Osborne gave her a look of complacency, and his lordship actually came back, after the others were out of the room, to beg her pardon, and look in the window-seat behind her for the gloves which were visibly compressed in his hand. As Tom Musgrave was seen no more, we may suppose his plan to have succeeded, and imagine him mortifying with his barrel of oysters in dreary solitude, or gladly assisting the landlady in her bar to make fresh negus for the happy dancers above. Emma could not help missing the party by whom she had been, though in some respects unpleasantly, distinguished, and the two dances which followed and concluded the ball were rather flat in comparison with the others. Mr. Edwards having played with good luck, they were some of the last in the room.
"Here we are back again, I declare," said Emma sorrowfully, as she walked into the dining-room, where the table was prepared, and the neat upper maid was lighting the candles. "My dear Miss Edwards, how soon it is at an end! I wish it could all come over again."
A great deal of kind pleasure was expressed in her having enjoyed the evening so much, and Mr. Edwards was as warm as herself in the praise of the fullness, brilliancy, and spirit of the meeting. Though, as he had been fixed the whole time at the same table in the same room, with only one change of chairs, it might have seemed a matter scarcely perceived. But he had won four rubbers out of five, and everything went well. His daughter felt the advantage of his gratified state of mind, in the course of the remarks and retrospections which now ensued over the welcome soup.
"How come you did not dance with either of the Mr. Tomlinsons, Mary?" said her mother.
"I was always engaged when they asked me."
"I thought you were to have stood up with Mr. James the last two dances.
"'Mrs. Tomlinson told me he was gone to ask you, "'and I had heard you say 2 minutes before that you were not engaged.' "'Yes, but there was a mistake. I had misunderstood. "'I did not know I was engaged. "'I thought it had been for the two dances after, if we stayed so long, "'but Captain Hunter assured me it was for those very two.
"'So you ended with Captain Hunter, Mary, did you?' said her father. "'And whom did you begin with?'
"'Captain Hunter,' was repeated in a very humble tone.
"'Hum! That is being constant, however. "'But who else did you dance with?'
"'Mr. Norton and Mr. Stiles.'
"'And who are they?'
"'Mr. Norton is a cousin of Captain Hunter's.'
"'And who is Mr. Stiles?'
"'One of his particular friends.'
"'All in the same regiment,' added Mrs. Edwards.
"'Mary was surrounded by redcoats all the evening. "'I should have been better pleased to see her dancing with some of our old neighbours, I confess.'
"'Yes, yes, we must not neglect our old neighbours. "'But if these soldiers are quicker than other people in a ballroom, "'what are young ladies to do?'
"'I think there is no occasion for their engaging themselves "'so many dancers beforehand, Mr. Edwards.'
"'No, perhaps not, but I remember, my dear, when you and I did the same.'
"'Mrs. Edwards said no more, and Mary breathed again. "'A good deal of good-humoured pleasantry followed.' And Emma went to bed in charming spirits, her head full of Osborne's, Blake's, and Howard's. End of part two.
Part three of The Watsons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Read by Gesina. The Watsons, a fragment of a novel by Jane Austen. Part 3.
The next morning brought a great many visitors. It was the way of the place always to call on Mrs. Edwards the morning after a ball, and this neighborly inclination was increased in the present instance by a general spirit of curiosity on Emma's account, as everybody wanted to look again at the girl who had been admired the night before by Lord Osborne. Many were the eyes, and various the degrees of approbation with which she was examined. Some saw no fault, and some no beauty. With some her brown skin was the annihilation of every grace, and others could never be persuaded that she was half so handsome as Elizabeth Watson had been 10 years ago. The morning passed quickly away in discussing the merits of the ball with all this succession of company, and Emma was at once astonished by finding it 2 o'clock, and considering that she had heard nothing of her father's chair. After this discovery, she had walked twice to the window to examine the street, and was on the point of asking leave to ring the bell and make inquiries, when the light sound of a carriage driving up to the door set her heart at ease. She stepped again to the window, but instead of the convenient, though very unsmart, family equipage, perceived a neat curricle. Mr. Musgrave was shortly afterwards announced, and Mrs. Edwards put on her very stiffest look at the sound. Not at all dismayed, however, by her chilling air, he paid his compliments to each of the ladies with no unbecoming ease, and continuing to address Emma, presented her a note which he had the honour of bringing from her sister, but to which he must observe a verbal postscript from himself would be requisite. The note, which Emma was beginning to read rather before Mrs. Edwards had entreated her to use no ceremony, contained a few lines from Elizabeth, importing that their father, in consequence of being unusually well, had taken the sudden resolution of attending the visitation that day, and that as his road lay quite wide from D, it was impossible for her to come home till the following morning, unless the Edwardses would send her, which was hardly to be expected. "'Or she could meet with any chance conveyance, "'or did not mind walking so far. "'She had scarcely run her eye through the hole "'before she found herself obliged to listen to Tom Musgrave's farther account. "'I received that note from the fair hands of Miss Watson "'only 10 minutes ago,' said he. "'I met her in the village of Stanton, "'whither my good stars prompted me to turn my horses' heads. "'She was at that moment in quest of a person to employ on the errand, "'and I was fortunate enough to convince her "'that she could not find a more willing or speedy messenger than myself. "'Remember, I say nothing of my disinterestedness. "'My reward is to be the indulgence of conveying you to Stanton in my curricle. though they are not written down, I bring your sister's orders for the same." Emma felt distressed. She did not like the proposal. She did not wish to be on terms of intimacy with a proposer. And yet, fearful of encroaching on the Edwardses, as well as wishing to go home herself, she was at a loss how entirely to decline what he offered. Mrs. Edwards continued silent, either not understanding the case, or waiting to see how the young lady's inclination lay. Emma thanked him, but professed herself very unwilling to give him so much trouble. The trouble was, of course, honor, pleasure, delight. What had he or his horses to do? Still she hesitated. She believed she must beg leave to decline his assistance. She was rather afraid of the sort of carriage. The distance was not beyond a walk. Mrs. Edwards was silent no longer. She inquired into the particulars, and then said, "We shall be extremely happy, Miss Emma, if you can give us the pleasure of your company till tomorrow. But if you cannot conveniently do so, our carriage is quite at your service, and Mary will be pleased with the opportunity of seeing your sister." This was precisely what Emma had longed for, and she accepted the offer most thankfully, acknowledging that, as Elizabeth was entirely alone, it was her wish to return home to dinner. The plan was warmly opposed by their visitor. "I cannot suffer it, indeed. I must not be deprived of the happiness of escorting you. I assure you there is not a possibility of fear with my horses. You might guide them yourself. Your sisters all know how quiet they are. They have none of them the smallest scruple in trusting themselves with me, even on a race course. Believe me," added he, lowering his voice, "you are quite safe. The danger is only mine." Emma was not more disposed to oblige him for all this. "And as to Mrs. Edwards' carriage being used the day after a ball, it is a thing quite out of rule, I assure you. Never heard of before. The old coachman will look as black as his horses, won't he, Miss Edwards?" No notice was taken. The ladies were silently firm, and the gentleman found himself obliged to submit. "What a famous ball we had last night!" he cried after a short pause. "How long did you keep it up after the Osbornes and I went away?"
"We had two dances more."
"It is making it too much of a fatigue, I think, to stay so late. I suppose your set was not a very full one."
"Yes, quite as full as ever, except the Osbornes. There seemed no vacancy anywhere, and everybody danced with uncommon spirit to the very last."
Emma said this, though against her conscience.
"Indeed, perhaps I might have looked in upon you again, if I had been aware of as much, for I am rather fond of dancing than not. Miss Osborne is a charming girl, is not she?"
"I do not think her handsome," replied Emma, to whom all this was chiefly addressed.
"Perhaps she is not critically handsome, but her manners are delightful, and Fanny Carr is a most interesting little creature. You can imagine nothing more naive or piquant. And what do you think of Lord Osborne, Miss Watson?"
"He would be handsome even though he were not a lord, and perhaps better bred, more desirous of pleasing and showing himself pleased in a right place."
"Upon my word, you are severe upon my friend. I assure you Lord Osborne is a very good fellow."
"I do not dispute his virtues, but I do not like his careless air."
"If it were not a breach of confidence," replied Tom, with an important look, "perhaps I might be able to win a more favorable opinion of poor Osborne."
Emma gave him no encouragement, and he was obliged to keep his friend's secret. He was also obliged to put an end to his visit, for Mrs. Edwards having ordered her carriage, there was no time to be lost on Emma's side in preparing for it. Miss Edwards accompanied her home, but as it was dinner hour at Stanton, stayed with them only a few minutes.
"Now, my dear Emma," said Miss Watson as soon as they were alone, "you must talk to me all the rest of the day without stopping, or I shall not be satisfied. But first of all, Nanny shall bring in the dinner. Poor thing! You will not dine as you did yesterday, for we have nothing but some fried beef. How nice Mary Edwards looks in her new pelisse! And now tell me how you like them all, and what I am to say to Sam. I have begun my letter. Jack Stokes is to call for it tomorrow, for his uncle is going within the mile of Guildford the next day." Nanny brought in the dinner. "We will wait upon ourselves," continued Elizabeth, "and then we shall lose no time. And so you would not come home with Tom Musgrave?" "No, you had said so much against him that I could not wish either for the obligation or the intimacy which the use of his carriage must have created. I should not even have liked the appearance of it." "You did very right, though I wonder at your forbearance, and I do not think I could have done it myself. He seemed so eager to fetch you that I could not say no, though it rather went against me to be throwing you together, so well as I knew his tricks. But I did long to see you, and it was a clever way of getting you home. Besides, it won't do to be too nice. Nobody could have thought of the Edwardses letting you have their coach, after the horses being out so late. But what am I to say to Sam? If you are guided by me, you will not encourage him to think of Miss Edwards. The father is decidedly against him, the mother shows him no favour, and I doubt his having any interest with Mary. She danced twice with Captain Hunter, and I think shows him in general as much encouragement as is consistent with her disposition and the circumstances she is placed in. She once mentioned Sam, and certainly with a little confusion, but that was perhaps merely owing to the consciousness of his liking her, which may very probably have come to her knowledge. Oh dear, yes, she has heard enough of that from us all. Poor Sam! He is out of luck as well as other people. For the life of me, Emma, I cannot help feeling for those that are crossed in love. Well, now begin, and give me an account of everything as it happened." Emma obeyed her, and Elizabeth listened with very little interruption till she heard of Mr. Howard as a partner. "Dance with Mr. Howard? Good heavens, you don't say so! Why, he is quite one of the great and grand ones. Did you not find him very high?" "His manners are of a kind to give me much more ease and confidence than Tom Musgrave's." "Well, go on. I should have been frightened out of my wits to have had anything to do with the Osborne's set." Emma concluded her narration. "And so you really did not dance with Tom Musgrave at all, but you must have liked him. You must have been struck with him altogether." "I do not like him, Elizabeth. I allow his person and air to be good, and that his manners, to a certain point, his address, rather, is pleasing. But I see nothing else to admire in him. On the contrary, he seems very vain, very conceited, absurdly anxious for distinction, and absolutely contemptible in some of the measures he takes for becoming so. There is a ridiculousness about him that entertains me, but his company gives me no other agreeable emotion." "My dearest Emma, you are like nobody else in the world. It is well Margaret is not by. You do not offend me, though I hardly know how to believe you, but Margaret would never forgive such words." "I wish Margaret could have heard him profess his ignorance of her being out of the country. He declared it seemed only 2 days since he had seen her." "Aye, that is just like him, and yet this is the man she will fancy so desperately in love with her. He is no favourite of mine, as you well know, Emma, but you must think him agreeable. Can you lay your hand on your heart and say you do not?" "Indeed I can, both hands, and spread them to the widest extent." "I should like to know the man you do think agreeable." "His name is Howard." "Howard? Dear me, I cannot think of him but as playing cards with Lady Osborne and looking proud. I must own, however, that it is a relief to me to find you can speak as you do of Tom Musgrave. My heart did misgive you that you would like him too well. You talked so stoutly beforehand that I was sadly afraid your brag would be punished. I only hope it will last, and that he will not come on to pay you too much attention. It is a hard thing for a woman to stand against the flattering ways of a man when he is bent upon pleasing her." As their quietly sociable little meal concluded, Miss Watson could not help observing how comfortably it had passed. "It is so delightful to me," said she, "to have things going on in peace and good humour. Nobody can tell how much I hate quarrelling. Now, though we have had nothing but fried beef, how good it has all seemed! I wish everybody were as easily satisfied as you, but poor Margaret is very snappish, and Penelope owns she had rather have quarrelling going on than nothing at all. Mr. Watson returned in the evening, not the worse for the exertion of the day, and consequently pleased with what he had done, and glad to talk of it over his own fireside. Emma had not foreseen any interest to herself in the occurrences of a visitation, but when she heard Mr. Howard spoken of as the preacher, and as having given them an excellent sermon, she could not help listening with a quicker ear. "I do not know when I have heard a discourse more to my mind," continued Mr. Watson, "or one better delivered. He reads extremely well, with great propriety, and in a very impressive manner, and at the same time without any theatrical grimace or violence. I own I do not like much action in the pulpit. I do not like the studied air and artificial inflections of voice which your very popular and most admired preachers generally have. A simple delivery is much better calculated to inspire devotion, and shows a much better taste. Mr. Howard read like a scholar and a gentleman." "And what had you for dinner, sir?" said his eldest daughter. He related the dishes and told what he had ate himself. "Upon the whole," he added, "I have had a very comfortable day. My old friends were quite surprised to see me amongst them, and I must say that everybody paid me great attention, and seemed to feel for me as an invalid. They would make me sit near the fire, and as the partridges were pretty high, Dr. Richards would have them sent away to the other end of the table, that they might not offend Mr. Watson, which I thought very kind of him. But what pleased me as much as anything was Mr. Howard's attention. There is a pretty steep flight of steps up to the room we dine in, which do not quite agree with my gouty foot, and Mr. Howard walked by me from the bottom to the top and would make me take his arm. It struck me as very becoming in so young a man, but I am sure I had no claim to expect it, for I never saw him before in my life. By the by, he inquired after one of my daughters, but I do not know which. I suppose you know among yourselves." End of part 3.
Read by Gesina and Laurie Ann Walden.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.